Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Kevin Werner.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
And welcome to...
Talking Musical History Podcast. Learning history lessons for the musicals we once loved. Talking Musical History Podcast.
This is actually one of my... most favorite is musicals when I was a wee lad in high school. I was a junior. I played Benny South Street in my school's production of Guys and Dolls. One of my favorite musicals, and obviously much better than 1776 by all the reasons, but whatever. That's just one ding, by the way. Like, every time Chris mentions 1776, you should take a shot, seriously. And yes, I spoke about myself in the third person.
And I'm sure people will be hammered by the end of all this. Yes.
Hey, if I say something positive, you don't have to take a shot.
I was loving this musical when I was in...
1776?
Guys and Dolls. That's the name of the musical we are talking about today, is Guys and Dolls. We're just a bunch of crazy guys and dolls.
What? Is that from The Simpsons?
That's from The Simpsons. I was not involved in any production of it myself. However, I remember listening to the 1992 recording and falling in love with all of it. And I remember watching the movie version, which we did watch, and we go into pretty in-depth. And one of my relatives, who was the wife of my cousin who owned a tree farm, she was General Cartwright. She was in her golden years. In a very nice community theater version of that, which was very nice.
General Cartwright's a real, you know, she's an upstart. And she's like, what? You're winning souls by gambling? That's pretty revolutionary.
And Sybil Haddon was a lovely woman. So we'll start off with a bit of the history here. Who made this happen? Starting with two short stories in the 1920s and 30s titled The Idol of Miss Sarah Brown and Blood Pressure by Damon Runyon, neither Chris or I were able to actually find.
Yeah, this material is actually really difficult to get your hands on unless you, like, go out and find a book, which, what the hell's that?
We like doing the research, but we're not going to buy a book for two things.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you know, like if you guys want us to read some books, you can donate to the Patreon, and we will read all the books and make sure that you guys have a much more in-depth experience. Until now, you're going to have to get used to our stunning personality and our ability to search really hardcore on the internet, which is pretty dope.
All of his stories were dealing with gangsters, gambling, and the underworld characters of New York. Music and lyrics were written by Frank Loesser, with book by Joe Swerling and A. Burroughs. That started on Broadway in 1950. Frank Loesser was the famous Jewish composer and lyricist for not only Guys and Dolls, but also How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, as well as the winter, now in the Me Too era, problematic song Baby It's Cold Outside. Joe Swerle was a fellow Jewish theater writer, lyricist, and composer. Other than Guys and Dolls, he did not have any real big hits other than the uncredited work in Gone with the Wind and It's a Wonderful Life. A. Burroughs is so Jewish that he was originally born Abram Solomon Borowitz, but of course had to change his name, like my mom's family did, because of anti-Semitism.
That makes sense.
This proud American Jew was a Tony Award-winning humorist, author, and director of radio and stage. He also wrote for Danny Kaye's short-lived 1940s radio comedy show. Character treatment for Guys and Dolls is credited to him with his experience in that era. The character, Big Julie, is supposed to be a safe legal stand-in for Al Capone.
I mean, that's what we were taught when we were doing the musical. The film Guys and Dolls, like, considering it did phenomenal.
Much, much better than 1776.
Oh, wow. I didn't even have to. So that means you don't have to drink, ladies and gentlemen.
Sobriety saved. First characters that we meet are drab, boring, dark characters in dark colors. In the rest of the retroistic 1950s New York City, were carefully crafted by Joe Meisner and Alvin Colt. The play opened with the golden 1950s, and we are ready for a nice choreographed, star-studded cast by 1955. Michael Kidd was featured heavily in the opening credits of this movie. Very, very famous choreographer. His name, you might recall, was spoken by Robin Williams, who was giving a lesson in dance acting to one of his dancers in The Birdcage.
Oh, wow.
As a way to know how to move, Madonna. Kidd was another Jewish gem from New York City, like all of the others involved so far. He may have done stuff that you have seen.
Like what?
Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Ooh.
Guys and Dolls, obviously. Little Abner.
Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea what that is. It was also a movie.
And, well, right, that's credited with both. I've never seen it, but I know of its existence. I'll put it that way. Much like I know how Finian's Rainbow, I know that only from being in a musical theater class, which won him a Tony, originally choreography that he also won in Guys and Dolls, Can Can, Destry Rides Again, which I have not heard of, where he also was nominated for Best Direction of a Musical, even though he did not win these. He did choreograph Breakfast at Tiffany's for the stage.
Oh, wow.
But it never got to production.
Yeah, I guess that. But I mean, it's cool that they tried.
The Music Man for the revival in 1980, taking his bow with The Goodbye Girl.
Talk a little bit about Alfred Damon Runyon, what this is all sort of based off of. It's really interesting because he wrote all of these different short stories, like you were saying before. He's a newspaper man. It's very influential in what was going on in American history or what's going on in America at the time. And, he's sort of like really prolific in writing in the 1930s, 1940s. He started in 1911. Cartoons. I don't know. It seems like a lot of Americana is based around this guy that we had a very difficult time finding random parts of his work. I mean, there are not many Americans you can say that about.
Were you able to find a picture of him?
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, his cartoon, Benny Southstreet is a character, Harry the Horse, Nathan, these are not native to the movie Guys and Dolls, right? Or the musical Guys and Dolls. I did find someone had his radio show recorded, because he had a radio show too. I mean, mm-hmm. This guy was like I'm saying, pretty prolific, and it's just odd that it's hidden. It is interesting though, because he's sort of been through the era of Prohibition, and his characters talk about mobsters and whatnot. The full story of Guys and Dolls, I'm sure you guys all know it. It's pretty simple, but I think it's why I hate 1776, and and why this story makes more sense is correct me if I'm wrong, Lindsay Ellis, if you're out there, the whole thing, and I'm literally just doing this off my seat of my pants, but the whole thing is that you have these two couples that end up, marrying by the end of the show. And I don't really like the way the movie portrays it personally, because I don't think it characterly makes sense for the whole arc of everything. But the idea is that, you know, you have like Nathan Detroit, who's, you know, the local, and Benny South Street, nicely Johnson, all of them sort of like existing in the world, trying to get this crap game together. And Nathan, for multiple years, what, 13 years or
14? It is 14. In the song lyrics. Yeah.
14 years has avoided marrying Adelaide. Like, Adelaide is like spent time like telling her mom through letters that, like, you know, you're having children. Yeah, because he had a son. He had Nathan Jr. first. And then they had a little girl, right? After that, the imaginary girl.
I just remember there was a lot of kids.
There were a lot of, I think, five kids.
I think five sounds right.
Yeah, well, like one every 2 years. You have like a Nathan Nicely and Benny South Street, whatever. They're trying to get the crap game, right? Get the crap game going. And, you know, the Biltmore Garage wants a grand, but they ain't got a grand on hand, right? So they're trying to figure out, well, how can we get money? Enter Sky Masterson. Sky Masterson's a holy roller. Like, maybe he's going to give us some money, right? Oh, we just need to come up with some ridiculous thing to bet him. Oh, let's find out how many cheesecakes that Mindy sells. Cheesecakes or strudel? Which one do you think they sell more of? You know, and then Sky Masterson instantly sees through this. And he's like, look, you know, my dad told me once upon a time this was going to happen. Some guy's going to come in and say, hey, this is a sealed deck. I'm going to make this car jump out and spit cider in your ear.
If you're silly enough to fall for that, you deserve the cider in your ear.
So, like, you know, watch out for those scams. Because, like, you know, if something is so specific like that, like, it's probably going to bite you, you know, just like the too good to be true. That doesn't work out. And so he comes up with a counter idea. You're going to Cuba. Maybe you can't take a specific girl to Cuba with you. And he's like, I could take any girl to Cuba. All the girls like me. Take that girl. Cider.
I got cider in my hand.
That is a great, not really, Marlon Brando, but I appreciate you. You should have seen his face. It was amazing. It was mostly in the face. Like, if you've seen the movie, he was dead on.
It's not like I've seen the movie five billion times as a kid, you know, or anything like that.
Sky's trying to figure out, how am I going to get this woman to go to Cuba with me. So he's like basically following around, trying to like figure out some sort of angle. And then like, finally he's like, oh wait, she's trying to get these people in to do a prayer meeting because her mission's in trouble. So like, all I have to do is like figure out how to get them to come in to get her to go. So I can definitely win this $1,000 bet. And he's like, look, here's my marker. I'm going to get this place filled with sinners. You're going to hit your goals. She decides to go to Havana, with Sky Masterson. And in the meantime, Nathan Detroit, Nicely, and Benny South Street have decided to infiltrate the mission and started to do their gambling there. Big Julie, the guy with the gun, I guess. You know, obviously, Al Capone. This guy, I think, is a lot more brutish. Just as smart, but a lot more brutish. Not British, but...
Oh, I thought you were saying British as well. I was like, I don't remember that part about it. Okay.
Julie Smash. There's a lot more fighting in the Havana scene than like
anywhere else.
Yeah.
Anywhere else in the entire movie.
And there is an actual fight, right, between, you know, Sky and Big Julie. They go out to Havana. Sky falls in love with Sarah. He didn't expect to fall in love with Sarah, but he falls in love. And she is drunk, so of course she falls in love with him.
If I were a salad, I know I'd be splashing my dressing.
I'm sure her pants had her dressing splashed. Innuendo. Innuendo. He still wants to make do on his marker, and also like is trying to like separate him from the situation because I think he's like, oh no, I'm so vulnerable because I'm in love now.
They have the push me, pull me relationship.
Nathan promises Adelaide that they will get married. If you're romantic, like Guys and Dolls is a pretty easy musical to sort of like. Like, Adelaide thinks that they're supposed to have a wedding, like, at the same time the crap game's supposed to go on, and they're waiting for Sky Masterson to pay off the bet. But it turns out that Sky Masterson took the girl, the doll, to Havana. These two new lovers that, like, come together. These two old lovers that realize, you know, what are we wasting our time on? One thing I didn't appreciate about the film, like, I feel like Skye Masterson should have been wearing the mission uniform.
Was he at the end of the stage play?
I believe so.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, the idea is, like, well, I mean, she's not stopping to be a mission doll.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Like, literally, they divided the group.
The Shakespearean homage to the story, because it's very Shakespearean. A lot of, in Shakespeare's comedies, they would all end in double marriages. There'd be some communication breakdown. There's some mishap, you know, identities switched around, and and then they end in double marriage. So yeah,
no, and definitely there's a lot of like farcical elements. I can't get mad at Guys and Dolls as much as like as simple as it is. Like, I mean, like 1776 could have been better.
If it were not for anti-Semitics, it would have been the winner for the 1950 Pulitzer Prize for drama, due to A being caught up with the House of Un-American Activities Committee, leading to nobody receiving that award that year. Originally, the 1950 premiere at the Richard Rogers Theater, starring Robert Alda as Skye Masterson, Sam Levine as Nathan Detroit, Isabel Bigley as Sarah Brown, and Vivian Blaine as Miss Adelaide, as the four main lead roles. There was a 1992 revival that we both loved to listen to when we grew up that starred Peter Gallagher as Skye, hot off Birdcage with Williams, Nathan Lane as Nathan Detroit, Josie de Guzman as Sarah, and Faith Prince as Miss Adelaide. Although Lorna Luft, Judy Garland's daughter, auditioned for the part but performed the touring company. And this is where I want Chris's live reaction if he doesn't know this already. Before he was a household name with Whiplash, for those that didn't watch Law & Order, J.K. Simmons, no relation to Gene, who was in the original movie, but hailed from our great state of Michigan, played Benny Southstreet in that performance.
Oh, really? That's pretty cool. That's fun.
In 2009, we saw The Stars Come Out for the Hollywood Bowl performance.
Oh, yeah. That was, I was talking to you about that. Right.
Of the concert performed with Scott Bakula as Nathan, Brian Stokes Mitchell as Skye, Audrey herself, Ellen Green as Miss Adelaide, and Jessica Biel as Sarah Brown.
Really? Huh. All right. I didn't know she played Sarah Brown.
Megan Mullally also graced the stage to perform this as well. Stars came in to save the movie. Not bad looking cats. When they made the movie worse, they replaced some people for star power.
Yeah, no, there's a recording of Guys and Dolls with like Sammy Davis Jr. and still with
Frank Sinatra.
Yeah. So it's like Dean Martin, like the Rat Pack doing Guys and Dolls. Why wasn't it the Rat Pack doing Guys and Dolls?
That would be really cool.
Like they could have done all the songs. It would have been easy.
All those were singers. They knew how to
and
use
actors.
Their voice.
Yeah, and dancers.
Yeah. They were the whole nine yards.
Probably would have been their most popular film.
For the movie, in 1955, they replaced some people for star power to move it along, with deleting some songs. Old Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra, played Nathan Detroit. Instead of Jewy old Sam Levine, as the Godfather, Brando took on the role of Skye Masterson. It would have been Gene Kelly, but was not eligible to do because of rights with MGM, who ended up distributing the film anyways. Vivian Blaine got to play her original role she created as Miss Adelaide. Gene Simmons, the woman, not the Kiss performer, was replacing Isabel Bigley as Sarah Brown.
For Sarah Brown, I heard that they were looking at Deborah Kerr and also Grace Kelly. I know that the studio was really happy about Gene Simmons specifically. Simmons, who played opposite Brando. I mean, she did do an adequate job. She got her song. She was able to sing her song, and it was decent.
Yeah, her songs actually were not really cut. They really just cut more Adelaide than
it cost $5 million, which considering like the star power and the amount of like there was a lot of studio effort put into that film.
A very inappropriate way that it looks when Frank Sinatra is sitting in Mindy's.
I don't know. You see if you can see what I'm talking about. I'm not gonna say what I thought it was. But a great movie compared to like the other Michael Kidd musicals, the big ones. So like Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, like that movie made almost $10 million, $9.5 million. Terrific. They saw that movie and they were like, "Bah, money." Guys and Dolls comes out, spend the same amount of money on that movie, just a little bit more. And like they're able to like knock it out of the park four times as much they spend in, and that's just like the theatrical run. That movie, compared to Hello Dolly, which I like Hello Dolly, but what they spent $20 million on that movie, and it like basically broke even. Yeah, should have been Dolly Parton. No, I think that would have been like I'm no hate against Babs. I think she's an amazing entertainer, and her version of Hello Dolly is terrific. However, I think that if they wanted to like make a ridiculous amount of money, Dolly Parton would have probably been the choice. You know, they play the safe bet. 100% play the safe bet. And Dolly Parton, obviously not the safe bet at that time in history.
Yeah, I'd have to guess somewhere in like the late 60s, early 70s. They probably would have had to slip everyone Hello Dollies before, because execs usually say no at first. And we will do Hello Dolly at some point in time as well.
A movie is like where you know you have arrived. When your book or your play or your musical, whatever, either that or it becomes a video game. That would be the only other.
Yeah.
Because like if you're like, yeah, when your movie becomes a video game. Could you imagine if Rocky Horror Picture Show was a video game?
That would be amazing. I wonder if Richard O'Brien has ever been approached by someone to do that.
It would like it wouldn't be like it's not a shoot 'em up. That's the thing. It would be like a puzzle game.
It would be somewhere maybe in the connection of Clue. It would be something like Who Did It or Where Did, you know, combine the Tim Curry movies and there you get a video game.
But we digress. Yeah. The guy who plays Harry the Horse does not have Harry the Horse's song role.
His character was changed to be Society Charlie after Harry the Horse shows up. At a very early point, we are taught to pay more attention to the gangsters of the 1930s style, but in the 1950s.
It's interesting because it's like this hybrid of like feeling like 1950s, but like it seems like some of the things that are happening definitely feel more 1930s.
Sinatra, when he says,
"Nathan, guess who's sitting in Mindy's right now eating a steak breakfast? Hitler? Wrong. Sky Masterson."
So I thought at first it was 1930s when I heard that line, because I thought, you know, in the 30s, Hitler was on a blitzkrieg on the roll and ready to take over the world. And, you know, by the 50s, he was dead. You know, in the 50s, the guy's sitting home in front of his television set.
I think they put that line in because they probably figured at some point that the movie would be shown on television.
However, I did hear it when I was listening to the stage production last night. In the titular song, they have a sign of what's playing at the Roxy, guy from the Minnesota Band who moves away all the Biloxi, which is Biloxi, Mississippi, which is part of the plot of Neil Simon's Biloxi Blues about Jews facing wartime in 1945. There could have been a conspiracy theory that the writer who threw the Hitler line in there, maybe there was something about him escaping and you know, like kind of like Elvis is alive, even, you know.
I think you actually might be onto something around that, because I think there were some. I mean, there's always conspiracy theorists about, like, you know, a lot of other things. And I think there might have been a conspiracy around Hitler not being dead.
Much like Howard Da Silva, who played Ben Franklin in 1776, Frank Sinatra, who had to defend his freedom of speech and expression in the same way that Howard Da Silva did. He was a strong Democratic supporter until 1970, when he started to support his actor friend who entered into politics, Ronald Reagan, but never stopped fighting for racial justice in any way he sought to do so. Marlon Brando, on the other hand, remained politically active on the, I will say, right side of history for his entire life, and in the era that Sinatra went politically to the right, Brando, in 1973, used his Oscar award as a platform to speak out against injustice. And some would say the gathering wood for the flame to ignite the hashtag #OscarsSoWhite movement when he sent Native American Sachin Littlefeather to decline his award and make a political statement about unfair treatment to their people that unnerved John Wayne backstage. They had to hold him back because he was trying to attack Sachin Littlefeather.
I mean, yeah, John Wayne. For those of you that don't know, now you know. John Wayne, no bueno. Go look him up, please. Not the stuff that he's good for. Try John Wayne racist.
Song opening the movie, Running Land, Fugue for Tin Horns?
Yeah, Fugue for Tin Horns. Yeah. Because yeah. The fugue is, like row, row, row your boat. Oh, especially a person pretending to have money. Like, it's not... It's the song is like what they're interested in. Yeah, at the very end. But like really, it's theme variation, other variation with the three of them singing about like the specific horse they're interested in while all following the same sort of.
And how was it singing it? How did you feel when you were singing as Benny South Street that song?
It was a lot of fun, you know. I'm picking Valentine. The morning works look fine. And besides, the jockey's brother's a friend of mine. Needs race. It was a fun group. Mike, who played Nicely Johnson, and Brian, who played Harry the Horse. I hope they someday listen to this. I think it's funny. But like, I had a great time singing with you guys. I get why people fall in love with musicals, because like when I auditioned for this, I had no idea. I knew when I auditioned and got the role for this, I knew about Les Miserables. I knew about Miss Saigon. I knew about Cats. Yeah. I mean, like if you lived in the 80s and didn't know Cats, like yeah, I mean, obviously like Music Man, because like that musical is on TV all the time. It's actually, I feel like it's on TV more than Guys and Dolls ever was. What I did that, and then I did Dreamgirls the following year. Yeah, Guys and Dolls, like pretty much solidified my love for musicals. I mean, music, The Sound of Music, that always comes on, you know. Yeah, people love that one. And Oliver. Yeah. I'll do anything for you, dear, anything. I feel like people like movie musicals more than we let on.
Nicely Johnson was played by Stubby K, born Bernard Solomon Shalom Kotzin, who we know as children of the 1980s being Marvin Acme in Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Or early nerds remember him from an episode of Doctor Who, also in Lil Abner, Cat Ballou, Sweet Charity, as well as other stuff I have never heard of. Nicely is joined by character Benny South Street, played by Johnny Silver, who is known for two comedies in the 1960s. Lepke, a biopic gangster film that has been called Tony Curtis's underrated but best performances. After I Was Born, he appeared in two movies that I have actually seen and like, History of the World Part 1,
oh, yeah,
and Spaceballs, both directed by the great Mel Brooks. Also, he was in episodes of H.R. Puffin Stuff.
I just like the name.
And Seinfeld.
What did he do in Seinfeld?
That was his last acting gig, was Seinfeld.
You know what Marlon Brando's last acting gig was? Transformers! Robots in disguise! He did the voice of Unicron. Yeah, the cartoon movie. The best Transformers film. I don't care what anyone else says. Screw you, Michael Bay. 1986.
As we noted before, that the actor for Harry the Horse was different for the remainder of the film. That actor is Sheldon Leonard, as most have seen in It's a Wonderful Life as Nick the Bartender. For fans of the Big Bang Theory, his name was the basis for character names Sheldon Cooper and Leonard Hofstadter.
That show is super popular, and I don't watch it. I'm sorry.
Kevin and Chris realized that there is a lot of media content competing for our consciousness, and we just want to let all of our listening public realize that it's not that we don't like it. It's just that there were other things to watch.
I mean, like, you know, Marlon Brando, Frank Sinatra. Could you imagine if it were the Rat Pack? Could you imagine if, like, Benny South Street was Sammy Davis? No, Nicely Johnson was Sammy Davis Jr. And Dean Martin was Sky Masterson.
Masterson. That would be awesome. That would be really great.
Oh, my gosh. And you could still have Jerry Lewis if you wanted to. I don't know. You could still have Jerry Lewis be Benny South Street. I don't think that would probably be a good fit at all.
I don't think Jerry Lewis could really sing.
Oh, no, he can. He's a pseudo crooner. Benny South Street doesn't have to be amazing. I'm going to play some singing Jerry Lewis right now, I think.
You're right.
For somebody, all your dreams.
Yeah, he could have pulled it off. I like, my concern actually would be that he would try to be too silly, yeah, as Benny South Street.
So I was gonna say, song comparisons from Fugue the Tin Horns to the Follow the Fold, uptight Bible beating Salvation Army, quote unquote, but called something else so they wouldn't get sued.
There's a lot of that in Guys and Dolls.
This song is clunky, boring, repeats itself over and over. It gets stuck in your head, even though you don't want it to be stuck in your head. So you're singing,
through the meadow, where the sun shines, out of the darkness. I've watched some productions where people are like, well, you know, the Save a Soul Mission, they did broken instruments because they were run down, mm-hmm, and they, like, you know, they don't know how to play them, and right, like all that. And I get that, but you're doing a musical.
You don't want people walking up and leaving the theater before you got into like the main characters. Gangsters all have these cool names like Benny South Street, Nicely Johnson, Harry the Hood. And then the Mission folk all blend together with one.
They're also wearing the same clothes, right? Like
the same clothes.
That, like, uniformity versus diversity. It's very interesting. Yeah, the Devil's First String Troops, right?
Except for lovable old Uncle Arvide Abernathy, played by Regis Toomey, was in a lot of movies from 1929 to 1979. Not one I even recognize, except for the name Top Gun, but it was an old Western having nothing to do with the Tom Cruise movie.
I really like Uncle Arvide's character specifically because if any of you watch Avatar: The Last Airbender, he's Uncle Iroing all over the place, trying to give them wisdom and guidance.
The only other one to have been given a name was stern but fair General Matilda Cartwright, played by Catherine Givney, in a fair amount to be a working actor of the time that spanned from 1930 to 1969. But much like the career of Regis Toomey, nothing I have even heard of. After the song, when a con artist is selling gold watches for $1.
Arbide, come on, bud.
They were never that cheap. Following the very two different songs and groups of characters, we see a barbershop with the introduction of the character that never sings. We meet the cold, calculating Lieutenant Brannigan.
Though that would have been interesting to give Brannigan a random... He never catches anyone. How frustrating could that be?
Well, and this is even more frustrating. Listen to this. His career, played by Robert Keith, who was, again, in a lot of old movies I have never heard of, spanning from 1924 to 1961. Brannigan threatens Nathan Detroit, who had not appeared yet, through Nicely and Benny. A few moments after Brannigan exits the shop, Nathan Detroit comes breezing through the door before singing Oldest Establishment with Benny, Nicely, and the boys. This is where we see the only black man in the entire film.
Oh, yeah, right.
All too quick before Sinatra steps in the to block him.
Oh, what, you don't think that was just coincidental that that happened so many times?
Future Godfather Brando comes into the Mission on a bet to take Sarah with him to Havana. They sing about sparks fly in different directions in I'll Know, which is a push me pull me song that would have had a bit of dancing in it if Kelly was Sky. clear that he is talk singing like Rex Harrison did with My Fair Lady. Talk singing. Rex, I call it Rex Harrison it.
or Rexing it.
He Rexed it.
The dialogue written between the previous scene with Sky and Nathan, propositioning a lady's will in that work with Pickering wagering Higgins reminds me of that flow. Here is where you will also notice a change in lyrics and cut songs with some added. Like the next sexist piece of crap, Pet Me Papa.
What, you didn't like that song?
Instead of what was originally, there was a bushel and a peck about her devotion to Nathan instead of a creepy old guy song followed by Adelaide's lament as her power solo on the stage.
A bushel and a peck, you're right, is about how much she loves Nathan. And then right after that, she's like, why aren't you marrying me? Oh man, you're giving me a freaking cold.
They even undercut that with, in the movie, Frank Sinatra is talking on the phone in the middle of the performance to show how not important that song is. No changes were made with the titular song with Nicely and Benny, except for adding Nathan Detroit.
Yeah, Nathan was not supposed to be in that piece. It's just them talking about the relationships of Sky and Nathan. Mirrored. It's well put together. But I know. I get it. Sinatra. Frank Sinatra.
In Havana, there is a very memorable movie moment for me and a nice plug for Bacardi, but problematic, I can see, by today's standards, when Sky gets Sarah drunk on quote-unquote sweet milk, dulce de leche.
What's in dulce de leche?
It has a kind of natural flavoring.
Oh, what's the name of this flavoring?
Bacardi. with her saying, this would be a wonderful way to get children to drink milk.
Yeah. Drunk kids, though. I mean, drunk kids are always fun, honestly. Check the internet. No, I'm kidding. Don't give your kids alcohol. That's against the law.
Playing on her innocence, this starts her unbuttoning up with her self-actualization and her actual buttons on her coat.
It's a weird nervous action.
What I always saw it as was, especially when she belts out, If I Were a Bell, she's realizing who she is. She's coming into her own. She's able to see.
Yeah, she wants to get rung. I'm talking about a wedding ring. Going to the chapel. And like, it's all about church bells. Like, church bells are sort of a big thing in like the 50s and 60s, definitely.
One of the songs that was cut, My Time of Day, brilliantly sung by Peter Gallagher, sung beautifully by Sky and Sarah after they end their trip to Havana.
Ah, gosh. How do you cut that song? I'm sorry. Because it leads into I'll Never Been in Love Before. Oh, it's like the best song. It's this moment where Sky is like, ah, God damn it, I'm in love with this girl.
Well, and also if you listen to that song and you listen to the lyrics in Memory, there's some reminiscence of that song in Memory with the imagery of the stonewashed pavement.
Having four like runs on Broadway, they have 8 Tonys and a Golden Globe. I mean, it's a pretty simple musical that seems to touch a lot of people.
You know, you made it when you're on The Simpsons, and Simpsons parodied this in a very, very great way that made up a whole other song that's never in the musical. Was a combination of Star Wars and Guys and Dolls that I thought was brilliant. Hollywood keeps in Take Back Your Mink.
Take Back Your Mink is the classic song about how to break up with your sugar daddy. And there are tons of women nowadays that need that assistance.
But then they cut out another 2 songs. Adelaide gets her second lament cut.
In a sewer? He's in a sewer? What?
And then what makes us musical theater people more upset is then they cut another song that is touching that Arvide sings to Sarah, More I Cannot Wish You, where he sends his positive energy her way to find love. He's not just the sweet little lovable man.
He makes stuff happen.
Yeah, he knows.
But yeah, and that's sort of like why that song is so powerful, because he's basically like, you know, I think you have my blessing. You've made the right decision. This dude actually cares for you.
Crapshooter's Ballet happened, but then a big letdown of the stage show-stopping number following with Luck Be a Lady Tonight. But remember, Brando versus Gallagher or Kelly, certain characters look directly in the camera to help break the fourth wall like you do on stage, but the stage version is much better sung in regards to Sky Masterson, and some songs should not have been cut for extended dance sequences that featured Michael Kidd's albeit brilliant but too long choreography. And then Sue Me followed Luck Be a Lady Tonight with both the stage and the screen versions with Sinatra and Lane as Nathan Detroit pouring their heart out as a guy in their performances to the reluctant 14-year-old engaged doll Adelaide.
Yeah, specifically on Frank Sinatra's sort of performance, there's a point where they're like, I think Adelaide's on his lap, and then she's like, finds out, oh, this thing isn't happening, and she stands up, and he moves with her and instantly goes to his knees. And I'm like, man, that is a dude that understands how, like, physical movement works.
And that's where Sinatra and Nathan Lane both, I think, hit it out of the park. I mean, they really do this character justice when, you know, sue me, shoot bullets through me, I love you. Like, it's just, it's got that passion. Following that, you have another actual showstopper in both mediums. Sit down, you're rocking the boat, sung by Nicely Johnson. They did cut out the comparing of situations for the women in lead roles with Marry the Man Today.
Yeah, I don't know why they cut that song. Because it's like, do they even know each other?
Yeah, because, you know, you're right. They have had no interaction with each other. Adelaide and, that's a good point to bring up, Adelaide and Sarah Brown had no interaction with each other other than through Nathan and Sky.
Yeah, they didn't do a good job keeping that musical. Oh yeah, Marry the Man Today, trouble though he may be. Some people might think the song is problematic, and I get that. Some girls are crazy to get married. Some dudes are crazy to get married, right? So, like, let them have their fucking song.
In some ways, again, I could be very wrong in my analysis of this, but it's a predecessor to Company. It's a musical about marriage in a way that isn't in your face necessarily of you have a guy who wants a doll, but he has to work for that doll and he has to prove to that doll that that doll is self-sufficient as well. And she has a mind of her own. And it's clear it's made, Adelaide is self-sufficient and she supports Nathan.
Yeah. Adelaide and Sarah both have a mind of their own. They all have, they have their own motivations, and yes, it's solely around men, but they do have their other interests too. Sarah's religious interests definitely outweigh her interest to have a man, and, like, you know,
grand finale with the reprise of the titular song and the Shakespearean double wedding ending.
There's a lot of, like, simplified emotions, like religious versus state versus person, because, like, that's sort of like what's happening. For a fluff musical, it just happens to talk about a lot of random things. Luck Being a Lady as the number 40, like, reached up to number 42 once upon a time on the 100 greatest film songs list. You can't hate against it. I mean, the AFI even recognizes it as, like, an awesome musical.
It's lived on for this long, and it's had so many productions done, and I think it's probably one of the most done, if not maybe sometimes overdone, productions.
It's apolitical.
Because I think it's also been probably translated into how many different languages and produced in different countries.
Guys and Dolls, great musical. If you don't know, if you don't like, go watch the movie.
Yeah, it's worth a watch. It's definitely worth a watch.
Especially if you're a Marlon Brando fan or a Frank Sinatra fan. Come on. Yeah, it's on Amazon right now. You definitely should watch it. So what are we doing? What's the musical coming up next?
Well, the next one we're gonna talk about is Hans Christian Andersen. And the reason is because there have been some Disney.
Yeah, no, I mean, like what, Little Mermaid, there's a lot of random his stories that are just, like, a part of what Disney does. And now we're going to watch a musical about his life.
Thank you for listening. I am Kevin Werner.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
And you've been listening to Talking Musical History Podcast. Talking Musical History Podcast. Learning history lessons for the musicals we once loved. Talking Musical History Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.